Hello again and welcome to another episode of BitNote. This is David Collins and we'll be doing another quiet talk about video games this show. Have a listen and hope you enjoy. Okay, to start the show off with, I think I'm going to be doing something a little different for this show, and it's going to be doing another Let's Play. As you know, I've done it in the past, and it usually involves text adventures, but this text adventure basically has a bit of drama associated with it, but, you know, actually I'm not going to go into that right now. I believe that to some extent you got to take video games as they are and just look into them. This is a game I actually haven't played before, but you know what, in the end, let's dive straight into it. The game is called Depression Quest. It is by Zoe Quinn, Patrick Lindsay, and Isaac Shankler, and it's kind of, as you can tell from the title, it takes on a bit of a topic that's not quite usual for video games, and it's done using the Twine engine, which is basically a engine that allows you to create text-based text adventure video games that can be played through a browser. So without further ado, I think I shall dive right into the very start of this video game and see what it's about. Okay, so it starts off with a quote. It says, "Its emotional character is probably..." Okay, its emotional character is probably mostly indescribable except as a sort of double bind in which any all of the alternatives we associate with human agency, sitting or standing, doing or resting, speaking or keeping silent, living or dying, are not just unpleasant but literally horrible. Okay, that's a great start for the game. I guess with Depression Quest I should have had what I expect. That was by David Forrester Wallace. Now, then again, the game starts with a whole, like, explanation about it, so I better quickly cover that. Depression Quest is a game that deals with living with depression in a very literal way. This game is not meant to be fun or light-hearted experience. If you are currently suffering from illness and are easily triggered, please be aware that this game uses stark depictions of people in very dark places. If you are suicidal, please stop playing and visit this link to talk with someone. Basically, suicidepreventionlifeline.org. The goal of the game is twofold. Firstly, we want to illustrate as clearly as possible what depression is like so that there may be better understood by people without depression. Hopefully this can be something to spread awareness and fight against the social stigma and misunderstanding that depression sufferers face. Secondly, our hope is that presenting as a real simulation of depression as possible, other sufferers will come to know that they aren't alone and hopefully derive some measure of comfort from that. It goes without saying that because of the very nature of depression, it is experienced differently by every person who suffers from it. We aren't trying to say that this is the best or most accurate representation, merely that it is an amalgamation of experiences of the developers and several people close to them. Many of the following encounters deal with issues such as therapy, medication, handling a love life, and reaching out to support networks. In reality, less than half of depression sufferers actually seek treatment for reasons such as lack of money, perceived personal failing, or public stigma. These things were included in order to touch upon as broad a range as possible, since all these elements can be very important to sufferers of depression, though they will likely not be the experience of most sufferers. It is important to recognize that not everyone with depression is so lucky. Many of those with the illnesses don't have a lot of luxuries that we have in this game. We've written it this way so we can focus specifically on the illness, which becomes more and more difficult to deal with as a person who is less and less well off. For that reason, a portion of the proceeds from the game will be donated to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Click here if you'd like to contribute. The game uses audio as part of its gameplay. We encourage you to play with the sound on. Okay, so that music here is the music from Depression Quest. Okay, this game uses our audio as part of its gameplay. We encourage you to play with the sound on, and there it is. So we've got text, we've got music, so this is almost a perfect game to be playing on this show. Alright, let us click begin. It is early on a Monday morning. You are a mid-20s human being. You have a significant other named Alex, who you are rather fond of and you've been seeing exclusively for the past few months. By the way, the named Alex is highlighted. That's one of the quirks of it. So I'll just click on named Alex and see where it goes, takes me. You met Alex through a mutual friend a few months back. The two of you hit it off pretty well that first night. After a series of initially awkward dates, you finally became a couple, much to your surprise and excitement. Alex is 3 months younger than you are and is currently a student with a part-time job and a broad social circle. He's also got a wide variety of interests, and oftentimes you worry that you might be too boring for her, but she has been good at trying to reassure you that she's happy with you. Your relationship consists of a lot of nights in watching Netflix when you both got time off work and she doesn't have classes, with the occasional social outing that she tends to have to talk to you into attending. She tries to be understanding when you are in one of your moods, as she puts it, though you are starting to feel like she doesn't understand what it's like for you, and this is the source of tension in your relationship. Coupled with your reluctance to want to go to college parties, this feeds to your worry and not being exciting enough for them. Okay, back. Who is rather fond of, who that you've been seeing exclusively the past few months. The rest of your social circle consists of a variety of friends and acquaintances, some of you met at your day job, which is a little boring but pays the rent. Okay, so let's see what the day job is. You have a day job which you feel is nothing special. You start out receiving minimum wage, bloody bloody. You're not actually telling us what the day job actually is. Okay, never mind. You'd really like to find another job in the field of interest, but you feel like you're underqualified every time you look on online job postings. Sometimes you think about going back to school, but you'd be unsure if you'd be able to support yourself and wonder if the degree would really help anyway. Okay. You'd like to be doing more with your life, as would your parents, but you're still... Okay, we've got to see what the parental drama is about. You're one of the few people you know of whose parents never got divorced, but you do wonder if they still live each other sometimes. You have an older brother named Malcolm who's moved across the country with his wife to work at a high-paying job. Every major holiday that you see him at, you feel a bit jealous and like the lesser kid despite being genuinely happy to see him. You feel very ashamed of these feelings. Yeah, of course. Your parents genuinely care about you. This often involves inviting you back to your childhood home for dinner, though your mother thinks that you never visit quite enough. But you get the impression they don't fully understand you. They want to see you succeed and they don't know why you haven't gone farther into life yet because you're so smart and talented. Anytime you've tried to talk to them about your motivation issues, they tell you that the solution is simply to work harder or want it more. Your father is generally more forgiving of your lack of career path, while your mother seems to think you're too smart to be in the position you're in. You know they'll love and that they're not bad people, but you really feel like a big disappointment sometimes. Well, I can say one thing, high expectations can utterly hamstring you. That feeling of no matter what you do, that it's you should be doing better, it can take the energy out of any small achievement you make. But, okay, you'd like to be doing more with your life, but you're still in the process of figuring out what that means, how to go about it. You're also dealing with motivation issues that sometimes makes dealing with these things difficult. You feel like this is probably your fault, and on bad days you can feel inwardly angry and down on yourself for being lazy, but you're not quite sure how you can break out of it or how other people deal with these feelings and seem so very functional. You spend a lot of nights fixating or thinking about this, but never seem to do anything about it other than lose sleep. Yeah, that can be a bit of a pain wrecker. Anyway, next up. Okay, it's going so far as well. It's an unusually warm Wednesday evening. You've spent the past several hours at work. The past week or so you've found your job motivation flagging more than usual. You've been in a fog practically all day, simply going through the motions without realizing what you've been doing half the time, yet time seems to be moving at half speed. You're so checked out that when your boss approaches to tell you that it's dead and you can go home early, it barely registers. As you walk home, the streets hiss from the recent rainfall. Well, that certainly is appropriate to the weather we're having right now. You know that your significant other will be in classes until late, another couple of hours at least. You briefly consider using this serendipitous solitude to catch up on that project you've been working on haphazardly for the past few months. Ooh, what is this project? Let us see. A while back, you and some older friends were out at a bar catching up. After liquefying considerably more of your paycheck than was perhaps responsible, and ending up thirdly in your cups, you open up to the only people you really consider yourself close to and end up launching into a drunken tirade about the meaningless of your utterly meaningful job and ultimately your own existence. Hooray! Okay, the hooray isn't in there, that's my own little addition. Having never really seen you in such a state before, your friends were briefly taken aback by your sudden uncharacteristic outburst. One of your friends suggests that you get involved with your hobby on a more regular long-term basis, suggesting that you spend your energy on something you actually care about that might help you to better cope with the shittiness of your 9-to-5. Although you're embarrassed that you let your guard down and felt self-conscious at seeming to have single-handedly brought the moon down at your table, you convince yourself on the cab ride home that maybe it would be worth trying out. You began your project some months ago and miraculously managed to keep at it, though your actual level of motivation and subsequent effort rise and falls considerably. While you were surprised when you started at how good you felt about working on something you were passionate about, lately you found it hard to muster the energy to really care about even this. Yeah, it sounds like one or two projects have worked. Anyway, never mind that. Yes, don't worry. As soon as you think about the work that awaits you at home, you can feel the panic creeping in from the back of your brain, unbidden. All you can think about is how incredibly behind you are, and the amount of work seems nothing less than insurmountable. By the time you arrive home and change out of your uncomfortable work clothes and the stress is weighing down on you like a heavy, wet wool blanket, your computer seems to be staring at you from the desk. You want to sit down and work, but the mere thought of trying to work sends your stress levels flying. More than anything, you suddenly feel absolutely exhausted and feel a strong desire to simply hide in bed. Great. Do you? Okay, listeners, this is the first time we actually get a choice in where we go from here. Up to now, we click on things just to get more information, but here we are. First option is order some food, grab a drink, and hunker down for a night of work. Now, here's the fun thing. You know, this seems to be what you'd want to do. You hunker down and get working on it, but the whole thing is crossed out. It is in red, and it's got the strike-through command you normally see, which basically means that you cannot choose that option. You cannot decide to... It's basically saying this is one of your options, but you can't choose it. And I've read enough to know that this is kind of the point, but there we go. Option 2 is reluctantly sit down at your desk and try to make yourself do something. Number 3 is turn on the TV, telling yourself that you need a quick half an hour to unwind from work. Number 4 is crawl into bed, you're so stressed and overwhelmed that you couldn't possibly accomplish anything anyways. Ooh, this is a tricky one. Do you want to just try to recharge, or do you want to just keep burning at it? Eesh. The TV is out, you know, I mean... Fuck. Okay, we'll go with option number 2. Reluctantly sit down at your desk and try to make yourself do something. Okay. Oh, by the way, you've got some extra text underneath. You are depressed, interaction is exhausting, you are becoming more and more withdrawn. You are not currently seeing a therapist, you are not currently taking medication for depression. So let's try to do something. You make a stop at the fridge, turn your favorite playlist on, and sit down to start working. You open the last file you were working on, and as soon as your hands touch the keyboard, your mind goes blank. Ooh. All the motivation ideas when you arrived home vanish in a flash, and your brain seizes up, and you find yourself physically incapable of any sort of productive thought. You take a break to loosen up, popping into your email inbox, Twitter, and various other internet-based distraction fodder. Frustratingly, this pattern continues throughout the course of the evening. As soon as you try to focus on work, your brain diverts its energy away from the task at hand. While you keep flipping back and forth between your work, you find the sheer mental effort involved in keeping your brain focused is overwhelming and tiring. A few Twitter arguments, your YouTube videos, and sparse amount of actual work later, your playlist flips back to track one, and the ice in your glass has all but melted, diluting the last dredges of that Coke you were nursing. I'm not sure that arguing people is part of depression, but let's not get... Anyway, you look at the clock and realize that a few hours have passed since you sat down to work and you've made negligible progress. I can just wake up early tomorrow and catch up, you think to yourself as you climb into bed, even though you know that never actually happens. Okay, you are very depressed. You spend a large amount of time sleeping and hating yourself and have very little energy or motivation. You're not currently seeing a therapist. You're not currently taking medication for depression. Okay. It is a mild Friday afternoon. Alex calls from one of her classes telling you that there's going to be a really awesome birthday party tonight at her apartment that one of her roommates is throwing. You've hung out with this roommate a few times with Alex and you get along well enough but aren't particularly close. You don't have work in the morning and there's nothing else particularly to do tonight. You are feeling kind of run down but you've been fatigued most of the time lately. You mention that you're feeling ill because you're not sure how else to explain those feelings to someone else and say that you aren't sure you can make it tonight. There's a second of silence over your phone, but you can swear you hear the sound of your partner's face fall. Face fall? That sounds kind of anime. But anyway, she tries to convince you anyway. You haven't seen her this week, and she sounds pretty insistent that you come over. Oh yeah, face fall, right. She even drops a few suggestively worded hints that you can stay over with them tonight after the party. What do you do? 1. Shake off the funk and go have a good time with your girlfriend. And of course, that is marked out, as I said previously. 2nd is agree to go. And 3 is say you're really just not feeling well and can't make it. Look, I'm going to agree to go anyway. Because, I mean, I know the situation. Sometimes you're not up for it and you want to stay. But sometimes, you know, you got to do stuff even. I one time said a while back, if you've got two options, one of them is the same thing you nearly always do, then it's usually a good idea to go for the other one. So, agree to go. You agree to go even though you're not feeling social. You know it's important to Alex and you really like to see her. Seeing her does make you feel better sometimes, and hope this case tonight, even if it does mean dealing with the unusual social anxiety. Time to leave rolls around and you grab an overnight bag. Alex's apartment is a short walk away from here, and there are already people hanging out on the porch. You feel your chest tighten as you approach the building and steel your nerves. You quickly find your partner, chatting away with the birthday girl, and Alex immediately lightens up when she sees you. "I'm so happy you came. I wasn't sure you were going to make it." The young man taps her on the shoulder, and she turns back to you to apologize to let you know they have to do something for the party. Alex hands you a beer and plants a kiss on your cheek before going to deal with whatever came up. As you look around, you don't see anyone else you recognize. Ooh, dear gosh. Social anxiety simulator. Okay. Number one is enthusiastically socialize. Now, I just want to call out, you don't enthusiastically socialize. Socializing is an abstract verb. If you try to socialize, unless you really know what socializing means, it's not going to help. The key thing with socializing is you basically choose a random person. You just try to have a goal of learning. Take a poor person, give yourself the goal of learning as much as you can about that person, and just see where you go from there. Trust me, my parents are total socialites, and even they have trouble socializing at times. Anyway, but of course, that's enthusiastically socialized is marked out option. Two, awkwardly stand in the same spot, unsure of what else to do. That sounds brilliant if you're at the beginning of a rom-com. Put your bag in Alex's room and avoid the crowd there for a while. Well, only if there's a really, really good book there. Cling to the back wall, sip your beer, and wait for your girlfriend to return. Proceed to drink in earnest, hoping it makes you feel less comfortable. Okay. It looks, you know, I'm seeing a pattern. It always seems to be the one at the top seems to be the most active. So even though I think that it should be more positive, like just choose a random person, try to learn what you can about them, or just breach a conversation. Okay, let's go for the second one. Awkwardly stand in the same spot, unsure of what else to do. As Alex leaves you with a beer, you're unsure of what to do with yourself. Everyone else at the party sectioned off into smaller groups of people who know each other, and you feel like you might be too rude to butt into any one of their conversations. That's why you listen in and then seize the moment. As it's like a QTE, you know, quick time event or something. As you look around, you can tell that you don't really know anyone else at this party. The birthday girl, it is kind of uncomfortable in fairness. The birthday girl turns to you and thanks you for coming, and you chat with her a little until she is approached by other friends and she introduces you to them. Hurrah, partial success. You have very little in common with any of them, and they all seem to have known each other for a very long time. However, they're still friendly, albeit a little drunk, and ask you about your life and do their best to include you. You actually start to relax a little, but feel slightly excluded when you're the only one who misses that inside a joke about someone's professor. You know. You proceed to make small talk with the group until your girlfriend returns. At the end of the night, you're falling asleep with Alex, and she thanks you again for coming. Half drunk, she confesses that she thought you were going to flake out. She was pleasantly surprised you managed to come out. She says it lovingly, not quite sure how you feel about the statement. You are very depressed, spend a lot of time sleeping, hating yourself, and having very little energy or motivation. You are not currently seeking a therapist, you're not currently taking medication for depression. Okay, so it hasn't been totally, yeah. It seems no matter what you do in this game, the best you can do is have a holding pattern. I think that's generally meant to be the whole point of Depression Quest. It's very easy to make comments about the protagonist, but at the same time, you know, you sort of see that this is what a lot of people feel like, or some people do anyway, and I don't know. It's a little afternoon on a muggy Saturday. Your mother has come over for a surprise visit, claiming loudly that she doesn't see you enough, so she's decided to invite herself over. As you converse, she walks about your place, and you get the distinct impression that you're being inspected. Oh dear gosh. What's going on with you lately? She asks abruptly. Oh dear gosh. Abort! Abort! Run away! Run away! Get someone to phone you randomly and say that there's an emergency in the hospital. Taken aback some way by this left fielder, you tell her that you're not sure what she means. She repeats the question, saying that you haven't seemed like yourself lately. She gestures to your dirty dishes piled in the sink and notes the fact that you haven't actually called or visited for a while. Your reticence only seemed to spur her on more. She presses you and asks you if you're having problems with work or Alex, and you're beginning to feel increasingly battered by her sudden well-meaning but overwhelming inquisition. Mothers never stop. You know, there are a lot of... When a mother cares about you when you're kids, they never stop caring about you when you're an adult. Well, Rosebud is hopefully. Under her questions, you become increasingly uncomfortable. You want to be able to explain to her how you've been feeling, but the truth is you're not really sure to yourself. Nothing horrific has happened at work with your significant other or friends or anything like that, but at the same time, you can't deny lately that you've just been felt drained, so you're not really here. You technically don't owe your mother an answer, by the way, but let's not go into that right now. You wish you could tell your mother these things, but she hasn't been approachable about... But she hasn't been approachable about negative emotions in the past. She's the kind of person who holds the opinion that the solution to any problem is to simply try harder and maintain a positive attitude. A stance that has reared its head in past conversations when you've begun to explore the subject with her. You know she's unlikely to be understanding, and you feel the energy drain out of you when you imagine what would happen if you managed to blurt out everything you were feeling. What do you do? Let her know what you've been feeling down lately and that you appreciate her concern. Try to be honest with her anyway. Tell her that everything is fine. Thank you for asking. Change the subject. Ooh, actually, sorry. Now my words come back to bite me. I said she doesn't need... I was kind of like defensive. She doesn't need to know, but now I actually have the option to not tell her. Ooh. Okay, well, this is why games are great, you know, by the way. In a movie or in a book, you would have, like, constantly told the character what to do without caring about the consequences, but then the game suddenly throws you with the actual... question and makes you decide, then you have to deal with the consequence. So now that the question is in my hands, what do I do? Oh, to let her know what you've been feeling lately and thank you, appreciate for her concern, that option is completely struck out. Trying to be honest with her anyway, tell her that everything is okay and thank you for asking. See, if I'm honest, she might get worse with me, and if I change the subject, then I might feel bad and more alone, and if I tell her that everything and thank you for asking, I might end up feeling guilty for not being honest with her. And... Okay, up to now I've always been choosing option 2, because number 1 seems to be blocked off, and 2 seems to be the one where you connect with people most of the time, so... Budget. Option 2. You attempt to tell the mother how you're feeling, despite initial misgivings that you have about doing so. Finding the right words for how you're feeling seems like trying to entangle Christmas lights, searching for the dead bulb in the cluttered mess. She watches you intently and audibly sighs before you can clearly articulate anything. Unfortunately, she reacts particularly. An attitude like that won't get you anywhere. You need to work harder at getting what you want instead of sitting around and feeling sad about it. Nothing good will happen unless you make it happen. She isn't angry or spiteful as she tells you this. You try to explain that it's not a matter of that, but you can tell that she's not getting anywhere. The frustration chokes the words in your throat, and you give up on trying to push the subject further. You know she's giving you advice that makes sense to her and genuinely wants the best for you, however she doesn't understand that it's not that simple, somehow, deciding to be positive or work harder. It's that those things aren't viable options because of those feelings. You accept your defeat and conversation drifts into other subjects. She leaves after chiding you to call her more often and take better care of yourself. You sigh heavily as you close the door and spend the next few hours in bed staring at the ceiling. You are very depressed. You spend a large amount of time sleeping, hating yourself, and very little energy or motivation. You are currently not seeing a therapist. You are currently not taking any medication for depression. Okay, so that option seems to have made us more depressed. So I guess trying to be honest with your parents is something we shouldn't be doing with depression. I'm being facetious, genuinely. It's a lazy Sunday morning. Because it needs it. You are idly clicking around online as your phone rings. Sam, a co-worker of yours that's friendly with, asks how you are and makes hurried small talk with you. You're typically only ever talk to him on the phone when one of you needs to shift covers, so it's slightly awkward. You're waiting in anticipation for him to ask you to come in at short notice when he veers the conversation in a completely different direction. How do you feel about cats? He asks. Mine has kittens a few weeks ago, and I'm having an awfully hard time finding a home for the last one litter. You don't have any pets, right? It takes you a moment to process this new information. You're caught off guard. He earnestly tried to sell you on the idea of taking the last kittens off his hands. It's not something that you had specifically considered before, and he seems fairly insistent. She's a real sweetheart, really loves people. No cats love people. I'm just kidding. She's got all her shots already taken care of, and the vet said she's healthy as a horse. I can bring her over by your place tonight if you're interested. So, a healthy kitty, not one with one paw and one eye, that would make her even cuter. Or some people would. Okay, let's not go into that subject. You look around the apartment and try to picture a cat as it continues to tell you about how cute she is. You tell him that there's all kinds of sun and that you won't have anything for the kitten set up here. Oh, don't worry about that. I can bring over a litter box and food and all that you'd really be helping me out of fix. It's the least I could do. I just don't want to have to put her in a shelter. You can't help but feel you're being guilt-tripped. You are being guilt-tripped. you decide to give it some serious consideration. It does seem like awfully lonely around the apartment and might feel less empty with a cat around. However, since you've been feeling so down, it does not seem a good idea to take on the responsibility of a cat, even if they are fairly low maintenance. What do you do? Take the cat knowing full well that you can take great care of it. That's a marked out option. Option number two, decline. Even though you'd be totally capable of taking care of it, you're not much of a cat person. And that's also marked out. You know, so a lot of these marked out options seem to be similar to options that are already there, but I think that changes as the game goes on. Become a cat owner. You could use companionship. Decline. You're not in good company enough to be taking on more responsibility right now. Decline. You don't like cats. Okay, so I see the problem with this. If you're kind of depressed and everything, maybe you shouldn't be taking on responsibility, but I like to think of this entire thing as one of those, like, you know, like one of those sappy drama movies about the person with depression whose life was suddenly made better by the arrival of a cat, not sure if they would be able to deal with it at first, but suddenly finding companionship and happiness. And yes, taking my life decisions, or at least video game decisions, from Hollywood movies seems to be a completely winning strategy. I shall go for option three, become a cat owner. You could use the companionship. You accept the offer of kitten and hang up shortly after making the arrangements. Oh, and there's a nice little photograph of a kitten copped up. Yeah, there are one or two images, but they barely ever do anything, so you're not missing out that much. This just shows Polaroids of a cat, and there's a bunch of stack of Polaroids in the top left. Who uses Polaroids anymore? Anyway, Polaroids are cool, but they were very much a kind of like a very brief sort of thing, you know? They kind of came across and went... You accept the kitten and hang up shortly after making arrangements for when your co-worker can drop her off tonight. After hanging up, you worry about if you've suddenly taken on responsibility you can't handle and hope you don't make a small animal suffer for it. You're not entirely sure what to expect. You spend the rest of the afternoon researching cat care online and trying to think of a name. The evening rolls on, you hear a knock at the door, starting out of reading Wikipedia entirely too hard. You take possession of a small, terrified black and white kitten in the carrier along with everything you need to start taking care of her. You take her to the bedroom, close the door, and open the door of the carrier excitedly. She cowers at the back of it, and you back off, feeling slightly defeated. You remember that what you searched on introducing kitten to a new home and leave her alone and go mess around at your computer, hopefully checking over the shoulder every so often to see if she's come out yet. She hides inside her carrier periodically, making sorrowful cat howl noises, long enough for you to start worrying that she already doesn't like you. By the time you go to bed, she's curled up at the foot of it, even giving you a eyeing you nervously before falling asleep. The next few days, you gain more of her trust and she begins to affectionately following you around, sleeping on you and hopping on you anytime you sit down to do some work. You're currently very depressed, spend a large time sleeping and hating yourself. And so basically, getting a cat hasn't made me any worse. And I think about that time, it is a late Friday afternoon, and now scanning down, we've still got two option things, but I think we'll leave it at that. So, this has been David Collins with BitNote, and this has been, I've been reading from Depression Quest, which is an interactive non-fiction about living with depression, by Zoe Quinn, Patrick Lindsay, and Isaac Shanker. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy. Yeah, all the best.